From high atop the eighth floor of Novell's Utah Development Center at the edge of the Rocky Mountains, this is Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on in and around the Novell universe. I'm your host, Ted Hager. Since this is our show's debut episode, we're going to give you a quick overview of what we intend this show to be. And that is, we intend this show to be a show where you can get more tech talk from Novell, and we're going to do it by bringing in key people who are working on Novell's various open source projects and working on various enterprise products. We're going to put these people in our studio and interview them so that you can hear how they talk about the things that they're working on. So, for instance, we may have Nat Friedman in 1 week, or we may have different people working on iFolder coming in. In fact, that's going to happen in this very show. So if you don't get enough information of what's going on inside of Novell and where our different products and projects are going, this is the show for you. What's more is, here at Novell Open Audio, we intend to make this an interactive show. We don't want to just have another podcast that is a voice or several voices just coming at you. So we've set up a few things to make this show as interactive as possible. For example, our website, which is www.novell.com/openaudio, we have a bunch of features that allow you to tell us how we're doing with the show and even influence where we're going with the show, what we're doing with it. As an example, you can actually put in requests for different subjects, topics that you want to hear about, or people you want to hear from on Novell Open Audio. Another example is, each show has a rating on the website. So after you're done listening to a show, you can go to the website and put in a 1 to 5 star rating to let us know whether you thought the content of the show was really good content for you, exactly what you wanted, was out of sight, or you can give us the, yeah, not so hot, we're looking for something else. There's feedback forms as well to let us know what you thought of any particular show or generally what you think of Novell Open Audio. Also on the website, you'll find that we have a schedule of our upcoming interview topics and dates and who we're going to be talking to about those topics. What's really cool about this is it allows you to submit to us questions that you might want us to ask of those people that we're going to interview. And we're calling this segment Tough Questions from the Community. When we have questions for somebody who's going to be sitting in, like say it's Miguel de Acasa sitting in with us, we will actually pose a question or two to Miguel, and you'll be able to leave us those questions on the website. We can read them that way. Or there's a couple other ways to contact us. You can do it by email. You can go to openaudio@novell.com, send your questions in that way or any other feedback. You can also do it by phone. So you can call us in the United States at 1-800-218-1400. Or if you're outside the U.S., you can use a toll line, 1-801-861-1313. We've also set up a Skype account, and that has voicemail attached to it as well. So you can look for us on Skype as Novell Open Audio. When you give us a question, we're going to ask you to leave your name, location, and if you're part of a Novell users group or Linux user group, let us know which Novell or Linux user group you're part of. Use your best radio voice as well, because we might actually play your clip on the air. And if we do, we're going to send you a t-shirt from Novell Open Audio. So you'll get a Novell Open Audio shirt that either says that you asked tough questions or that you were helping contribute to Novell Open Audio. Well, enough of the overview. Let's get into the interviews, the heart of the tech talk of the show. In our first episode here, we have two great interviews for you. The first that we have is iFolder with Brady Anderson and Calvin Gaisford, the two guys who are the maintainers of the iFolder open source project. They're going to give us a little bit of a view of what's going on with iFolder and where it's heading. Our second interview is going to be Novell Linux Desktop with Senior Product Manager at Novell, Guy Lunardi, the guy who works directly with Nat Friedman's desktop team and the SUSE Linux engineers. So let's cut right over to our first interview. It's about iFolder, an open source project for personal data synchronization, either to a back-end server or for peer-to-peer. It's written on top of the Mono framework, and we now go to our interview with our senior personal data synchronization correspondent, Aaron Quill.
Hi, this is Aaron Quill. I'm here with Calvin Gaisford and Brady Anderson on the iFolder development team, and we're here today to talk about iFolder. Calvin, why don't you introduce yourself?
I started at Novell back in 1992 and started working on the ZenWorks project. Actually, it was before ZenWorks. I worked on a little fun thing, I guess we called it back then, called the Novell Application Launcher, and actually worked a little bit with Brady, and he'll introduce what he was working on some of the workstation manager stuff. But eventually that became ZenWorks, and I worked on that for a number of years. More recently, I worked on the identity management, some of the identity stuff with the Liberty implementation, and we actually put together the first Liberty implementation and took it up and presented it to the Liberty group, which was kind of fun. They were shocked to see their own implementation. And then more recently, working on the iFolder project and now the open source iFolder project as well.
And Brady, what have you been doing for us?
Yeah, hi, my name is Brady Anderson. Been at Novell a long time, 18 years. First started at Novell back in NetWare 286 days. First development was done with NetWare 386. I worked on the OS2 requester, the NT redirector, ZenWorks. As Calvin mentioned, I started the Workstation Manager project, which later fed into ZenWorks. Also started NetStorage, was the original architecture on that product, and now on iFolder for the last 2 years. Specifically with iFolder, most of the stuff I work on is the external identity management. So when we sync LDAP directories in, when we authenticate to back in LDAP directories. And I also started the Simple Server project in iFolder and the Bonjour piece.
Now, I know on iFolder, and we'll get into exactly what iFolder is in just a minute. In iFolder, I know we've got an enterprise and an open source project. You guys are both involved in the open source project, right? Not the enterprise version.
Yeah, that's correct. iFolder, there's a 2X line or version, I guess, of iFolder, which was, it still is shipped as part of the Novell products. It's a commercial-only product. And both Brady and I were involved in that in the very end, getting together some Linux features in it and getting it ready as it transitioned the development to Provo, our Provo site. And then Brady and I moved on to the open source project, the iFolder 3, which is what we'll talk about here.
And what exactly is iFolder?
Well, iFolder 2 was started as kind of a backup, access your files anywhere, but it was an individual type of a solution. So you could have your files synced to your machine. You could access them over the web. They were always backed up to the server, but it was more of an individual solution. iFolder 3, which is what the open source project is based on, is more of a collaborative environment where you can share iFolders. You can have any number of iFolders that you want, and all of them get synchronized and backed up to a central place. And it still performs the backup solution and the access anywhere, but now it does it in a collaborative way so you can share your iFolders with multiple people and all of you can update and edit the files.
So when you say an iFolder, is that like a normal directory on my machine or a normal folder like I'm used to?
Yeah, it's you can convert any folder that you have in your, like your My Documents directory if you're on Windows, or in your home directory on Linux or on Macintosh. You can turn that into an iFolder, and then anything you put in it, including the directory structure below it, will get synchronized to the server and backed up.
And what does it take to actually convert a standard folder? Do I have to like go edit XML tags or something, or is it pretty easy?
It's pretty much a point and click. You click on the folder, you right-click on it, and you say, convert this to an iFolder, and it becomes an iFolder. And we have a little user interface that shows the status of all of your iFolders and where they're located, so you can see when they're synchronizing and when they're up to date.
Okay. So
one of the design goals early on is we didn't want to change the way you work. So we didn't want to have... You have to go install a redirector or go to a different place. If you're used to finding your stuff in My Documents on Windows, you just go to your existing document, right-click, make it an iFolder, continue to work the way you did before.
So there's very little training that needs to actually take place on the end user side, right?
That's correct.
So I save a file. As soon as it's saved, it gets synchronized up, or does it go through a waiting period, or how does that process work?
Yeah, basically what we do is we track changes on your local file system. We have a monitor. We keep track of all the changes you make. And then at a specified interval, we'll take all those changes, pull them together, and synchronize. First, checking the server, pulling down any changes from the server that have happened down local, and then pushing any local changes back to the server.
If I've got multiple machines, it's no problem?
Yeah, it's not a problem. We actually support multiple operating systems. So most of the development that we do is on Linux, but we also support Windows, and we also support Macintosh. In fact, I did most of the development on Macintosh, and I do a lot of the development that I do on a PowerBook, and am able to save the files on my PowerBook, go over to my Windows machine or go over to my Linux workstation, pull up the same files and edit them using OpenOffice because the file formats are compatible everywhere. It's a nice cross-platform solution.
And don't you also have some sort of access to the data through a web browser so that if I don't have access to my machine and I need to get a specific file that I know I saved in one of those iFolders, I can get to it?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it's probably important to point out there's kind of two different parts of iFolder, and one of them is what we call the enterprise server, and that's not part of the open source project. And that has a web interface that when you're using the enterprise iFolder server, you can also access it through a browser and see all of your iFolders and upload and download files through a web browser.
Oh, that's great. So I don't have to actually have a client on that machine or anything. I can just
walk up
to any machine and access my data. Very cool.
Right. If you're in the airport, at a kiosk, some other company where you don't have access to your machine, you can still get to your files.
Now, we talked a little bit about 2X and 3X and how 2X was the enterprise version. What are the big differences between 2X and 3X?
Well, as I mentioned before, 2X was really designed as a personal tool to back up and access your files from any location. 3X was started as a collaborative tool where we wanted the ability to share files and have them with you at any point so that when you're on an airplane and you're not connected to anything, you still have all those files that you share with people. You can work on them, and then when you get back to the office or to any internet connection, you plug in and the files get synchronized and other people immediately get your changes. So that's probably the largest difference. There's actually another component in iFolder that iFolder's built on top of called Simius. And Simius is more of our collaborative platform. Maybe Brady can share a little bit about Simius as well.
Yeah, when we started the project, we had other ideas of how we wanted to be able to collaborate with a single engine. You know, things like blogs, wikis, and so forth could also fit into this model. So we designed a system underneath that could handle that. I mean, basically, Simius is an object store that can do authentication and authorization, and then also synchronize. So those are the three main attributes of Simius that will allow us to build other collaborative systems on top.
Do we have other things planned that we can talk about, or this is just really the first thing that we're using to test it to make sure it's going to work properly and it's really architected properly?
Well, I've kind of joked. In several BrainShare presentations, I've given that iFolder is nothing more than a demo of what you can really do with Simius, because Simius does all of the, as Brady mentioned, does all the authentication, the access control. It actually does all the synchronization. The only thing iFolder itself does is present an interface to the user that shows these are the files and this is where they're located and this is the status of them. But the real workhorse is Simius underneath. So some of the things that we've played with, these are actually, the source code for some of these is actually out there, but we haven't made it into an official release or anything that we've done because they've been kind of projects up until now. But we had a thing called Slogger for a while, which was a blogging tool, actually, which allowed you to blog in Teams. So you have the ability with some of the blogging tools, but they're not local on your machine. So, again, if you're on an airplane and you have your laptop and you want to log something or share some information, it's a little more difficult with a lot of the tools that are out there. And the one that we had allowed you to work on the blog, look at other people's blogs, put comments on, and then when you plugged in, it would all get synced up to the back end. Some of the other solutions, we've talked about doing some photo things. I can't even think.
Enterprise Wiki.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we think it'd be very nice to put basically a WYSIWYG interface on top of a wiki, store it into Simius, and that way you could have an enterprise-level wiki that would be very easy to edit content. The thing that's nice about Simius that I didn't mention is that we have an extensible object store that's all indexed, so it's very easy to put content in and then to be able to query and find. And so through this wiki, again, similar to the blogger, you could have a team where you could actually assign rights and authorize, you know, who can change this page.
And would that also give me the ability to do some of this stuff offline for once? So I could actually
As Calvin said, I mean, that's the beauty is everything is disconnected. The way the engine works, we always write local. And then synchronization and anything that talks to the network always goes through Simius local and then out to the network. So it always goes to the local store first.
One of the things, and I just thought about this as Brady was talking, that we did borrow, I guess, or bring from the 2X product is all of our synchronization is done over HTTP or HTTPS. So in a corporate environment, one of the big concerns is obviously the firewall and opening too many ports to synchronize. There's a lot of synchronization tools out there, but a lot of them have proprietary ports or funny setups. Ours is simple through HTTP. You can direct it through your corporate system and just using a URL redirect it to the iFolder server, and you have one hole in your firewall that you have to worry about, and that's the one that's generally already open for your corporate users.
And that's great for consultants out in the field that are behind different people's firewalls all the time. Their stuff's able to sync back and forth.
Absolutely.
Which is really nice. Actually, Calvin, I've got a question for you back on something you said earlier. You talked about group iFolders that can be shared in between people. First, I think that's great because it reminds me of, 20 years ago when I actually did work for a living and installed servers. You know, one of the first things we would do is create home directories for everyone. And then we'd always create these group directories and map a permanent drive to it so that people within a group could share documents back and forth. It's that type of sharing, right? So maybe the small team that I'm on would have a shared iFolder. We could all store documents in there, and it would be replicated to everybody's machines, right?
It is very much like that. One of the big differences is the person that creates the iFolder doesn't have to be an administrator that runs the networks and understands all the complicated access controls and whatnot. It can be any person on your team can create the iFolder, can share it with the other people, and that person has control over granting people write rights or read-only rights and the ability to add and remove people to that shared iFolder. So it's very much run by the group of people that are using it without having to involve the administrators on the network. However, the administrators can still have control over how much space do they get to consume on the server, and things like that, but they don't have to deal with the day-to-day access control and whatnot of the shared areas.
And on those group folders, what happens when we get a file conflict? When somebody, two people change the same document at the same time, what do you guys do to decide who wins or make sure we don't lose information?
Well, conflicts obviously are a very difficult thing to solve, I guess, technically. And so we took a very simple approach. It simply tells you which files are in conflict. It tells you what the date and version timestamp of each one is. So there's the server version that was last modified by so-and-so, and then there's the local version, and the user simply picks which version is the one that's going to win. Now, we actually have two types of conflicts. There's also a name conflict. So say, you create a file that's called a.txt, and I create one that's called a.txt, and we both synchronize at the same time. I am actually given the chance to rename my file to something else, and then both files are preserved. But if we're working on an existing document and both of us made changes, the last person to make the change is going to be forced to make a decision which one wins or be able to look at the two and then merge it themselves.
I like the fact that you guys save both copies, though. Then I can go in and edit it and find out which one I actually want to pull the real data from. Because just because it was the last one saved doesn't necessarily mean it's the best version to keep.
That's right.
I'd hate to throw away the wrong data.
Yeah, we're actually looking at enhancing that a little bit as well and showing the history of the changes that have been made so you can go back and see, well, who are all the people that have changed this document and when did it happen? When was the last time it was changed? Or if it's synchronized, if you see it coming down and you wonder, well, who changed it? You can actually go in and see what the change was, and that'll be coming in a future release.
Yeah, one other feature that we could probably talk about a little bit that we haven't done any implementation on yet, but is the concept of a server-side trash can. I mean, today's market with ISPs and with all your digital data, end users are constantly losing that data. And that's one of the reasons they want to have iFolder, but they may still accidentally delete the data. And so we'd like to have the concept of a server-side trash can that would keep some number of versions. By default, it would be one up on the server, so that if you accidentally did delete that data locally, you could go back to the server copy and find it in the trash can and restore it.
I've got a couple questions for you guys on open source. First, what made you decide to do it? Why didn't you just keep this?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One of them was obviously among the developers was almost an emotional response to Novell's branching out, kind of embracing the open source. We got into Linux a little more. We got very excited about it and started tossing around the idea internally. But then at the same time, I think from a business perspective, they looked at it, and iFolder really isn't a product that's sold individually. It's something that enhances our current products, and the advantages that we gain from open sourcing it, having other people participate in it, really played into the decision of doing that.
And what model is it licensed under?
It's all GPL.
Yeah, basically the client, the engine, is all GPL'd. We're currently working on a set of APIs that are external to that Simius process that we will LGPL, or maybe a lesser license. But the Simius core is GPL. If someone wants to actually use Simius, or they want to take their current app and enhance it with some of these capabilities, they can talk to our LGPL library to do that.
I noticed 3.x is developed on Mono. Why'd you guys pick Mono?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons why. Obviously, when we started the project and we knew we had to basically start from ground zero, and many of us had worked on other web technologies, you know, we went through the different frameworks and tried to decide which one would give us the most bang for the buck. The nice thing about Mono and .NET is it's a complete framework. It has all of the OS abstractions that we need, the string handling. It has complete web service and XML support, which at the time we didn't have in other frameworks. So really, we could go to one-stop shop for all of our framework needs, and Mono gave us that. Like I said before, web service was a big thing. We wanted to make sure that all of our interfaces, anything that we expose, that we did that via web service, so that other applications could easily consume us.
So the other advantage that it gives us is, I mentioned earlier on, is the cross-platform nature of the product. We actually have five clients, if you count the server as one of them, being the and a web interface, but we use the same core on all of our platforms. So if you're running on Windows or on Linux or on Macintosh or on the server side, the Linux side, the core is all it's shared code. And so Mono gave us the ability to write the code such that it'll go on all those platforms. So Simius, which is the core and the sync engine and all that, is a single source solution that we put across the platforms.
And if I actually want to get this code and start to play with the open source version, where do I go? The website's ifolder.com?
Yeah, ifolder.com basically has links and all the information you need to know about how to get the code. We have tarballs that we post that you can work off of a tarball, or if you want to get right to the code, you can go to our SVN repository, and all the instructions are on ifolder.com.
And speaking of getting to the code, let's say I'm a developer out there. I've taken a look at ifolder. iFolder looks very cool. I want to help out. What type of help are you guys looking for?
Yeah, short term, one of the big requests we have is we'd like to have a web dev front end. So basically any web dev client could come in and access iFolders. That would give us more reach and more connectivity to smaller devices.
Yeah, I'd say some of the other areas that we'd really like help in is actually a lot of the client work. As I said, we support three different platforms. One of the most complicated ones to support is obviously Linux, because there's a number of distributions out there. Our primary focus is on Novell's distributions. We support SUSE 10. We're working on with a new NLD group. We support NLD 9 that's currently out there.
That's Novell Linux Desktop.
Yes, sorry. We also, surprisingly, have quite a group of people that follow iFolder on Ubuntu. So some of the areas that I think people could jump in is simply, you don't even have to write code, is simply taking the packages or the code, getting it to build on your favorite distribution, and then supporting packages and just keep it up to date, you know, as we go forward on those different Linux distributions. Some other areas is the Macintosh UI. We're always looking for help on that. It's not very common to find Cocoa developers, but the UI was all done in Cocoa using Objective-C. But basically any of the clients we would definitely take help on. And then obviously documentation, testing it on your favorite platform or distribution, and any sort of utilities that need to be done. So, you know, maybe command line interfaces into Simius, some APIs, and a lot of things like that. There's a lot of work to do, and we try to keep our website up to date as far as things we're looking for. So you can always check out there and see, you know, what are the things that people would like to see in this.
What about futures? What are you guys looking at adding short term? And then also, if we can just get a kind of big pie in the sky type long term vision of where you guys are going?
Well, on the short term, we kind of mentioned before that we're really focused on targeting the enterprise. So trying to take over all the features that are supported in our current 2X commercial product and building that into the open source project, being able to scale out for large organizations, including corporations, ISPs, or, you know, governments.
And Brady, were there any kind of big pie-in-the-sky futures you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, long term, we've built this nice Simius framework. It's all about collaboration, and it's really built around this concept called a collection. to where me as an end user, I create this collection and I want to collaborate with you, but I obviously want to put more things than just files in that collection. Things like, as we said before, blog entries.
Sure.
We'd like to put into that, possibly a wiki. We also have a nice tagging system that's built into Simius that we're not using at all today. So really just building more solutions so that when you actually create one of these collections, you can do more with it. So when you share it with somebody, that there's more you can do. It's easily queryable. You can issue queries on these tags. Really just build out what we started for long term. There's also a possibility that we've discussed of even having smaller clients that can just do iFolder only things. So that if you don't want to put Simius and you don't want to have the overhead of the .NET framework on your machine, that you can still participate in an iFolder and to be able to upload and download. So those are longer-term possibilities
okay. That
we may do with the project.
Calvin, what exactly is out on the open source site right now? I know there's a client out there, and what else?
Well, we have there's kind of two ways for people to get involved without having to purchase the corporate, you know,
Enterprise version.
Commercial version of this. We started kind of more for developers initially, and we've actually found that more and more people use it, is a thing called Simple Server. And it's in transition right now between Simple Server and what's called Simius Server. So
confusing. Great.
Yeah. You kind of caught us right between, you know, some of the transition we're doing. But Simple Server is basically a open source version of our enterprise server without all the features. It doesn't have a back end that we authenticate to. It stores all of the users and the credentials locally in a store, so you can't go against a large enterprise base of users. Well, you could, but it would, you know, you'd have to manage it all yourself. There's no integration with your like an LDAP system or any kind of authentication system. It doesn't support SSL, so all the synchronization just happens over HTTP, which you can get around that by tunneling some things and if you're creative, you can get around that, but it's not a pre-canned solution like our enterprise one that has all that built in. So Simple Server is a way, if you want to go out and try iFolder today and try your own server, you can actually go out and get Simple Server. There's instructions on how to build it and get it up and going. You can start up clients and synchronize between the clients and the Simple Server today.
Now we've got BrainShare coming up third week in March, I believe. I assume you guys are going to be there. You going to be showing us cool stuff during that week?
Yeah, Brady and I have I think three sessions at BrainShare. Some of them are kind of an overview of what iFolder is and what you can do with it and how to do some pretty basic things with it. We also have a developer session that's going to show a little more in detail of how you could use some of our APIs. Brady talked about some of the new APIs we have, how you could integrate some of your apps or synchronize your data using our synchronization engine, using our APIs to get the data in and out. And then I think there's like a BOF or birds of a feather. It's more of a kind of a community thing where, you know, we want to talk to people that are interested in iFolder, get their ideas, where they'd like to see it go.
Yeah, we'd also like to have basic prototypes of the future enterprise product that show some of our multi-server support. So we'll be there hopefully to demonstrate some of that, to show the architecture. So if you're a network administrator that's interested, stop by. We'll tell you how it works, show you our architecture, how this is going to scale out to huge numbers. So that should be exciting. We've also got a couple little demos that we want to do, some cool stuff. As far as integrating with standards, one of the things we've done is we've basically hooked an RSS feeder to Simius that allows you to feed your iFolders down through RSS. So through a simple subscription, you can pull those iFolders down. We'll actually mark those as enclosures so that on your feed client, if you want to go ahead and mount that into your file system, it'll sync those files down as a pull sync into your file system using standards-based protocols.
So in real layman's terms, it's going to be a really cool, simple synchronization engine that a lot of the OSs will support with built-in tools without having to put a special client down or anything like that. You can just, you know, hook up and say, I want to pull this down, and without having to install special clients, it'll use RSS to pull all that down.
Yeah, a good example of that today is Safari. So if you go on Mac OS X with the latest versions of Safari, they have a built-in feeder that actually does persistent syncing. So you can hook up to our feed and pull the stuff down.
That would be great. And so then anything that's saved to that, like, shared iFolder, whatever, would come down through that channel?
Yes, it would.
Great. Well, guys, thanks a lot for stopping by.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks.
Thank you, Aaron, Brady, and Calvin, for giving us the quick overview of iFolder. One of the interesting things about when Zimian and Novell first merged together is Nat Friedman took a look around Novell's various technologies throughout the whole portfolio of what the company had to offer, and the single technology that caught his eye most was iFolder. And he's told this story many times, said it just solves a clear and obvious need, people emailing files to themselves to get them from one machine to another, and email ending up this kind of weird file repository for things. So when Nat looked at that, he totally got the iFolder vision, and just it made sense to him. And interestingly enough, Nat Friedman these days is actually heading up the engineering effort on Novell Linux Desktop and works with our next guest on the show, Mr. Guy Lenardi. So we drop now into our interview about Novell Linux Desktop and introduce Guy. All right, so we're in the studio today with Mr. Guy Lenardi, the product manager for Novell Linux Desktop and good friend of mine. Guy, our question, I guess just to kick things off here, is why don't you give us a quick description of your relationship to Novell Linux Desktop? How long have you been working with it, and what kind of things do you do for it?
Well, thank you, Ted. It's good to be with you today. My role at Novell is product manager for the Linux Desktop. That also means that I'm responsible for all the databases relationship with a lot of the business units that have an impact on the product. At the same time, of course, because of a lot of its content is coming from open source contributions and projects that we don't necessarily work with, it's identifying all the components that are relevant to our potential customers and customers, get the feedback from our customers, work with the community to get those inputs and compose the product with the engineering team. So really capturing features in our feature database, working with partners, customers. Sales is, of course, involved because there is an objective for Novell to generate revenue for our shareholders, and we do that by working with sales and the other services component of the organization to make sure we're successful in placing Novell Linux Desktop on the market.
So that pretty much means then that if we were to carve it all out, you're the person in the organization who's going to know what's going on with the development process that Nat Friedman oversees, but you're also going to know about the marketing side and the sales side. So you're pretty much at the central hub of Novell Linux Desktop, and that means that you're a technical expert that can answer the kind of questions that I want to ask you about and talk to you about. I guess one of the first ones on this is it's been a little bit over a year, I guess, since Novell Linux Desktop came out. And what kind of progress have we seen? What kind of innovation has happened since the time that we released Novell Linux Desktop version 9?
Well, the project was released about a year ago. I got on board just a little bit before that, so I was a victim of the launch and all the expectations around it. And I have to say it's been an amazing ride for us. It exceeded everything we had projected, both in terms of adoption, in terms of sales for us, and the way the community has been able to work with us in making it successful. I have to say that when we say we're centered, we're fortunate enough to have very much visionary people working on the project, people like Nat Friedman allowing us to get a real sense of leadership, not only in the company, but outside in the community as well, helped establish that. And it's been a great ride. Now we're at a point where we have well over a year of showing for the product in the market, and we've been working aggressively against the next release, which I think is something you will be interested to talk about here. But let's not forget that NLD is in place for a while. It's an enterprise desktop product that's going to be allowing us to release and support customers for a long time. And that's a commitment that we're making that is a major distinction from some of the other distribution that were available in the past.
Cool. So you got customers and everything?
Yeah, you can say that. Definitely, we have great success stories, public one. The work that's been well publicized around the state of Indiana Department of Education and the work they've been doing in making schools more electronically aware and available with computerized schools is fantastic. I think Indiana is doing a great job there, and we're happy to participate in that exercise. And then there are other businesses, not necessarily in the public sector. For example, the retailer Ritz Camera has done a fantastic job at being forward-looking and establishing themselves as a way to do computing and lower their cost of having desktops in the stores that managers can use in a very efficient way without having all the burden of licensing that they would have otherwise with alternatives.
What kind of use is Ritz camera doing with it? I mean, you say in the stores, are these like cash register type machines, or what are they doing?
Well, we have products that deliver that specifically, working with partners, being able to do the point of services options. Absolutely, we do that today. Novellinx desktop, however, they're used in a much more complex environment that delivers a rich desktop experience to those users. So we're very excited about that. The work that the OSDL group has done, I invite all of our listeners to go take a look at the OSDL website and find for themselves what the desktop work group is doing over there, is something we've adopted in taking a use case-based segmentation of the market, saying, looking at fixed function like those point of sales we were just talking about, or transactional desktop like call centers or front office clerks and so on, all the way to the general purpose desktops, are ways that we are making sure our product is ready to address the needs of users.
Cool. So then it's progressing in the market and everything. And we know that the desktop that came out over a year ago is based on the code that was available that time. Open source moves pretty fast usually. So we got 10 coming up, you said?
Yep.
What do we got?
So you're right. I mean, the first thing I would want to say to that is NLD9 is intended for specific users, and we don't feel there is a strong need for all those projects to be updated. Very much so, we've proven that we're capable of patching all security needs and functionality updates that the customers would need, whether it's Mozilla Firefox updates that we need or equivalents to that. We've been able to put those out in the marketplace and make them available for NLD customers, and we're going to continue to do so. With that said, NLD10 is just around the corner. In the middle of this year, we're going to be releasing it in sync with our server product as well, the SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 10, which I'm really excited about as well. I think that with the creation of a true common code base between our desktop and server operating systems there, will provide a great platform for our customers to use. And it's all going to be based on the SUSE Linux distribution that you can find on OpenSUSE today. The differences are some components that we've been working with at hardening from a security, functionality, or just patching perspective, making sure that the changes our engineers, I'll give you an example from a kernel perspective, that may not necessarily be accepted upstream, that we feel are necessary, are things that we're going to lock in and pound on for the next 3 months nonstop to make sure we deliver the most reliable platform we can.
Did I hear a delivery date there?
Yeah, I did mention that middle of this year is coming up. May is what we're projecting right now, and we're pretty confident we're going to make that date.
Awesome, awesome. So I know I'm looking forward to this because I moved over to Linux desktop over, I guess, about 2 years ago now.
Don't I know that?
And yes, you do know that. Guy is my support person. The things that I'm looking at several innovations. I've had the privilege, of course, of being around Novell and seeing some of these things that are happening there. Before our community out there, for the people who are listening on this, what are some of the major feature areas that people are going to be looking at that are going to be make the desktop a personal thing to them, make it a fun place to work and be productive?
You really want me to get to the point of talking of the projects we're interested in?
Yes, and I do.
Before I do that again, I think there is an aspect of it which when Nat and I sat together and tried to draw the themes for the release, there are key areas that we wanted to concentrate on. Quality was one of them. There, we just lumping all the buzzwords, bingo, that you could think of around quality assurance and all that. That definitely is the case. Another one was usability. And we've done a lot of work that you're going to find in the product through projects like the Tango project. There, I named the first one probably. That's going to help us emphasize the usability of the desktop by bettering and beautifying the icons throughout the desktop product. So that's a really nice project that I invite everybody to take a look at tango-project.org, and you're going to find a lot of really interesting things, not only on the icons themselves, but if you're part of the community, you will see how we're trying to standardize the naming conventions and make sure we support it across not only our distributions, but over as well. So that was usability. There are other themes like hardware support, and anybody that has installed Linux in the past will know that there is a lot of work that needs to be done there. Novell, as a market vendor, being able to apply pressure, which I shouldn't say really apply pressure, but make sure our other hardware partners are aware of our customer frustrations and be sure to provide the drivers that are needed has been a really interesting ride for us, and we've been successful that way. Some of the tier one OEM vendors put us in touch with the chipset manufacturers that were responsible for making sure that either the specs were disclosed or prototype machines were made available, and all that is taking place today. I think I need to at least name Intel as a great partner of ours there, that we've been able to work together and establish a roadmap for our product supporting all the technologies that they're coming out with over the next year.
Okay. So another side to it is, you mentioned there are things that we're doing that are in open source through OpenSUSE project and things mm-hmm. like that, various other open source projects that are mm-hmm. out there. But NLD9 had some components in it, like it had the Flash Player and the Real Player in it that are proprietary products. And that's, from what I've seen of the different distros out there, that takes a little different tack than a lot of distros do. There are the distros that are like just pure open source, and then we've got distros like NLD that show up. What is Novell's philosophy on balancing between proprietary and open source? And is there a strict policy or anything like that? How much do you contribute back, for that matter?
It's a very fair question. The emphasis there is really on delivering the value that the customers are looking for. I can give you very concrete examples. You've mentioned the Flash Player, and you've mentioned Real Player as well. Those are both very good partners of ours. I want to say that these are expected to be required. When you look at a percentile aspects and the 90-20, the 10-10 rules, whatever percentage you may want to play with there, everybody needs that. What is a typical Microsoft Windows XP professional service pack to user experiences? By the time they're done figuring out and fetching for all the drivers they need, they actually go out and download the Java Virtual Machine and download the Macromedia Flash Player and download the Real Player. What we've done with Novell and Desktop 9 is secure partnership with those vendors, making it possible for us to deliver level 3 support of every one of those components and just put them in the box. What's there not to like? It's just saving you a whole lot of bandwidth. It makes it easier, and it's a version of those pieces of software that are supported. I have one more example, which would be, for example, the Citrix ICA client. A lot of corporate environments, which is somewhat our primary target for an LD9, are required to provide connectivity to Windows applications, and we couldn't have possibly done that without including the Citrix client. So we've worked with Citrix. We have license agreements allowing us for L3 support, and it's in the box.
Okay. So then with that, then I get the idea here that Novell doesn't have a strict, it has to be all open source policy with Novell Linux Desktop.
As long as we can support it and there is a will for the people to work together, there are ways we can put it in the system. You're going to find bugs in our Bugzilla that actually tracks issues related to some of that. The Adobe Acrobat Reader is another fantastic way to illustrate the leaps and bounds of how software evolved over the last year and a half. When we released with the Acrobat Reader 5 for Linux, which was grayscale icons, motif-based, if you will, really user-unfriendly. And now, if you look at the content of Service Pack 2 or Service Pack 3, the Adobe Acrobat Reader 7 was released, and it's just night and day. And it proves how some of those closed-source proprietary vendors are willing to use some of those open-source toolkit and create applications that really integrate well with the desktop.
Can I ask you a real hard question, then?
Mm-hmm.
Related directly into Adobe Acrobat, what about the printer functions?
Patrice Legrange, he is working at Adobe, he's the VP of Open Source, was actually participating in that OSDL Architects Summit that took place. And one of the action items was for the LinuxPrinting.org guys and Adobe to go back and work on one side on the PPD file formats, which Adobe is contributing a lot to, and at the same time see if we couldn't address some issues like the print dialog that's somewhat proprietary today. And
yeah, because I can't choose the printer today. And so Novell's actually dialoguing with Adobe to get that particular item right there fixed.
It wouldn't be fair. I think the entire open source community had a stance there. We were invited by OSDL to all share our concerns, and Teal for Mandriva actually was there representing the printing group, and Novell and the others were able to voice their concerns, and Adobe was very receptive and is going to work with the printing team to make that happen. So it's one of those outcomes. If you read the press and you think, well, it was a very bland meeting and some of the things they're trying to achieve is, no, that's not true. This is a real example of something where Adobe and those vendors got together, identified a problem, and turns out that the printing guys were in the room as well and able to say, we'll give you a hand and see if we can't get that addressed.
Great. So getting back to the idea of this as a corporate desktop, those of our listeners who are tuned into this are going that are network administrators and have classically been with Novell for a long time,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be looking at Novell Linux Desktop and asking the question, okay, so how do I tie it into my network? How do I get it so that I can access network file systems? How do I get it so I can access for authentication and things like that of users? How do I get it at our corporate directory service? What can you tell me about where NLD 10 is going on that?
Integration was another one of those themes that we had set for the product, and we identified the needs for enterprises and general organizations to be able to plug in the way their IT environment works today. So whether you're Novell eDirectory or Microsoft Active Directory or standard LDAP environment, we've done enhancements to simplify the configuration of that. Again, the open source community makes it somewhat possible today, but you have to have a PhD in PAM and some other modular architectures to figure that out sometimes. And I understand that some of our audience here today don't have the time because they're already pressed with budgetary cuts and just lack of resources to be able to do that. So Novell wants to help them with our management tools to make that a lot easier to integrate with those environments. So whether you have a network file system environment, so you're upgraded to OES and benefiting from all those features, you can use our Novell client for Linux to connect to that. Whether you have iPrint, iFolder, all of those are available in Novell Linux Desktop 10. They're out of the box. You can select them when you do your install, and it just flies from there.
So does that mean that Novell Linux Desktop 10 puts any kind of priority on hitting on network, classic network, or Open Enterprise Server, puts a priority on hitting those resources, or are we able to hit Samba resources, whether on Windows servers or Linux servers, or how's that all work?
Well, you know, that's part of my responsibility is to look at the market landscape and figure out what some of the trends are. And we have brilliant engineers at Novell who may not be able to work on open source projects, but tested the Linux spiel and wanted to put their clients there and address the needs of our customers. So Novell environments are really well addressed all the way to collaboration and group-wise connectivity and all those aspects as well. So I'm pretty pleased with the way Novell engineering got together and really released high-quality products that allow connectivity from a Linux desktop to the Novell backends. With that said, there is a trend on Microsoft support as well. So the Samba group is a fantastic organization that does a lot of work. We're contributing to that. We have people on our payroll that are working on those projects as well. So it's twofold. It's providing the best Linux distribution for Novell environments to use as a desktop. And at the same time, it also provides a really high level of integration with our competitors' IT environments as well.
Okay, I think that's great for the corporate desktop. That's your target market that you're going after with this. But I happen to know that you've got geeks helping to build this. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be stuff in it for the geeks as well. So what's the candy? What are the side things? Because the people that are our administrators and things, they don't just want something that works well in their enterprise. They also want something that becomes personal to them. So what's in it for the geeks?
Yeah, it's built on SUSE Linux. So all the benefits we're getting from that distribution and the tremendous work that our teams are doing over there as well is fantastic. And we're really, really happy about that. Beyond just what the open source is doing, we had identified stuff that needed help and creation. So I've mentioned Tango before. I think the leverage of the Mono project and the .NET framework that was put in place by Miguel, allowing us to do a lot of those desktop applications, has spearheaded a lot of projects. So if we start opening up a list, I will mention Benchy, for example, which is one project I know, Ted, you're really happy about. iPod support. You know, Apple kind of set a de facto standard for MP3 players, and we wanted to provide users with a really friendly way to do that. And that was somewhat possible in the recent past. If you tried newer versions of Linux distributions, you might have found that it was possible to do that. But it's the entire experience that we're after. It's like you plug the iPod and it works. The real unplug stack. The messaging bus underneath, really notifying applications of things taking place. Network Manager being more than just a user interface, but an actual way to let applications know that you're not connected to the network. A typical example is something you gave me, actually, talking about how you were getting frustrated by your game and its aggressive reconnect modes trying to get your instant messaging to go back online. Well, you didn't have a network connection, whether it was wireless or wired. That's addressed, and working with our partners at Red Hat, it's a whole co-petition work. They're doing some of the work. We're doing some of the work now. If you don't have a network connection, we're not going to try to log in to your IAM servers. When you don't have an IAM connection, Firefox is going to tell you you're not connected to the network. And the list just goes on and on and on. Even Banshee knows that it doesn't have network access, so it's not going to try to download information from the web to make your music browsing experience better.
So this is integrated across all apps that would hit the net for any reason. They're going to actually know, I can't do that right now.
One of my to-do thing is to make sure that all of the key applications are covered on that. And yes, there are still a few shortcomings that we're trying to address. And maybe Service Pack 1 is going to cover some of the missing ones, but that's there. So that's Banshee, and that's HAL, that's Dbus, that's all of those technologies. Network Manager is another one of the projects that's really changing the user experience on the Linux desktop. Another one would be F-Spot by Larry Ewing, and the fact that we could have one, Provedit is one of the most brilliant engineers I've ever worked with, one engineer being able to create the complete photo management application, which you and I are using as our application management. Nat has over 50,000 pictures on his. I think I'm up to probably 15, 20,000 images today.
He's had a camera longer than you have, right?
Well, yeah. He loses them quicker than I do, too, so... I truly think this is a great way. I remember several people in the open source community telling me that they felt spoiled by it, by some of the way the UI works and some of the functionalities. They're like, I want to be able to do that on any of my objects. Allow me to tag a file. Allow me to do this. Allow me to do that. Why can't I have a timeline on my file manager? I'm like, oh, hey, guys, this is really going at a very fast pace already, and we're very enthusiastic by the responses that we're getting, and all the feedback we get, we value, and we want to continue to do so. F-Spot, Banshee, Tango, all of those projects are just helping creating what I think is going to be a really great desktop experience for our users in this upcoming 2006.
Awesome. So my last question for you is this. We've got BrainShare coming up, the Novell big event, tech event happening in Salt Lake City this year. And I assume you're going to be there, yes?
Yes, yeah,
all right.
I will.
And so
yep.
I'm assuming Nat Friedman will be there, Miguel de Acasa, mm-hmm. several of the people who are working at Novell, many open source engineers, many product managers like yourself and so on, doing different presentations and things like that. What kind of stuff can people look forward to with the desktop at BrainShare if they're there?
There will be a lot of sessions. Our marketing people did a pretty good job at securing a lot of spots, so I would invite you to take a look at the BrainShare website and find the sessions you want to participate in. The keynote address will include the desktop demonstrations as well. We're going to show it to you in the breakouts. We're going to show it to you at the keynote. Right now, we made a conscious decision to go with, first of all, an authorized beta. Because we had so many requests, we want to make sure that we can support the people that are going to be playing with it. A lot of them are already in pilot phases, so there is a lot of control we wanted to put there. There is an authorized extended one as well, where a few more people were invited to work with us. And finally, I'm working right now with our marketing team to figure out how I'm going to be able to not be harassed and put at gunpoint to actually give away DVDs by the time we get to BrainShare. So I can't really say right now, but we're really doing our best to make sure that everybody's best interest, including your guys' fun, is taken into account when we come to BrainShare.
All right. So you're going to be up there on the keynotes. We're going to have some NLD up there. We're going to see a lot of different sessions and things.
Yeah.
People can browse those sessions now. Mm-hmm. So if they're considering going to BrainShare at this point, they can start finding the sessions there. And Mr. Guy Lunardi will be on several of those sessions, right?
Yes, I guess I am.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us today, Guy. We look forward to seeing you at BrainShare.
Well, thank you very much, Ted, and have a good day.
And that's our show. Tune into our next episode if you want to find out about Novell Open Enterprise Server with senior product managers Jason Williams and Troy Wild. That show will also feature the evil ZenWorks scientist himself, Mr. Martin Buckley. He's going to give us an update on what's been going on around ZenWorks lately. Remember, our website is www.novell.com/openaudio. You can also reach us by email at openaudio@novell.com. You may also leave a voicemail message with us at 1-800-218-1400 or outside of the U.S., 1-801-861-1313. You can also leave us voicemail through Skype at Novell Open Audio. Novell Open Audio is a production of Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. Thanks for giving a listen. We'll see you next time.